content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Hugh Bennett from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. The TBJ cover story this week, The Luminaries. It's a special report. Triangle women who have ascended the corporate ranks share their experiences so others can benefit. Before that, we'll go into the biz section and the reporter pages. Managing editor Dane Huffman brings us the biz section every week. Hillsborough Street sees new energy. Hillsborough Street in Raleigh is coming off a record year and is seeing fresh investment as the key corridor across from NC State University continues a post-pandemic rebound. The Hillsborough Street area collected a record $58.5 million in the prepared food and beverage taxes for 2025, according to Jeff Murison, CEO of the Hillsborough Street Community Services Corp. That was up from $57.7 million the previous year. Inflation, of course, has an impact on that, but as Murison said, up is up, and the numbers come as Hillsborough Street has added significant restaurants and has more investment on the way. Raising Cane's, the growing fast food chain out of Louisiana, opened in January. At the corner of Hillsborough and Oberlin is Barley and Burger, the fourth location for a group out of Rocky Mount. It's a positive trend for a key corridor in Raleigh, one that connects the Wolfpack campus with the heart of downtown. The pandemic hit hard, especially for a space so dependent on foot traffic. But the region has recovered, and new investment has poured in. The Hub on Campus luxury apartment building with 2,200 beds is rising at the former site of the Brownstone Hotel. That 12-story project is scheduled to open this year. Two other student properties are on the rise farther west. A Denver developer, the Cardinal Group, is putting two buildings, one 5 stories and the other 3, at the corner of Hillsborough and Bagwell Streets that once held a 1-story retail building and an auto shop. Dogwood Residential plans a 5-story, 108-unit apartment building where a Wells Fargo bank once stood. Also planned is a graduate hotel right across from the NC State Bell Tower. All of a sudden, we had a little growth spurt, Murison said. Think the Triangle is expensive? Check this Florida price. While home prices in the Triangle are skyrocketing at the luxury level, they still pale in comparison to some other American markets. For example, a home that stretches from the Atlantic Ocean to the Intracoastal Waterway in Florida has sold for $68.32 million, according to the South Florida Business Journal. A trust in the name of billionaire David F. McNeil, the founder and CEO of WeatherTech, bought the home in Manalapan, which is just south of Palm Beach and north of Fort Lauderdale. That's a staggering price for the 10,521-square-foot home. It includes 6 bedrooms, 9 bathrooms, a pool, and a dock. State leaders say, call us, we have cash. One of the challenges for the North Carolina State Treasurer is, it turns out, giving away cash. Treasurer Brad Briner noted that the oftentimes he or his chief of staff, Eric Nesbitt, will call folks about unclaimed property. In one case, Briner called a small plumbing company and left multiple messages. Someone finally returned the call, confident that it was a hoax. Turns out it wasn't, and the plumbing company was due $107,000 for a tax refund they never cashed. You'd be amazed, Briner said, at the number of unclaimed property checks that exceed $100,000. Discover Durham to promote Russo to CEO. Discover Durham has a new leader, and it's a familiar face. Kara Russo is the next president and CEO, a promotion from her role as chief marketing officer. She will take over after Susan Amy steps down in July. What a pivotal time for Durham and the work of our organizations to grow visitation in ways that are intentional, inclusive, and a force for community good, she said. Russo joined Discover Durham in 2017. And finally, in biz, River District taking shape near Charlotte. Charlotte, like Raleigh, is an unusual southern city in that it is not on a river. But an interesting project in the Queen City is taking shape to the west of town and on the Catawba River. The River District is a 1,200-acre project where Houston's Crescent Communities is the master developer. Crescent has sold a part of the project to New Regional Planning, which is developing the first neighborhood retail part of the project. The Charlotte Business Journal reported that New Regional Planning is developing a 28,000-square-foot, two-story mixed-use building. The River District is slightly more than 9 miles from uptown Charlotte. While it will take years to develop, the plan is for 2,300 homes, 2,350 multifamily units, and 8 million square feet of commercial space. Sounds like a smaller Chatham Park, right? Turning now to the reporter pages, the first one is Banking and Transportation, written by Lauren Onosorge. Banks scramble for carry market. Banks continue to sharpen their focus on carry. That includes Town Bank of Virginia, which recently opened a financial center in Cary following its acquisition of Raleigh-based Dogwood State Bank. Town Bank has relocated its Davis Drive branch to an expanded Cary Parkway Financial Center, which now also houses its wealth, mortgage, and merchant services teams. "We felt we needed to grow, so with the Dogwood thing, it was perfect timing," Brian Reed, president of Town Bank's Triangle operations, said of the new center. And Cary, with its existing Town Bank customers and top-dollar demographics, was the ideal location for that growth, he said, calling the town a great part of our success. Town Bank is not alone in its push into the town. Competition in the Cary market is intense and increasing. Federal Deposit Insurance Corp. data from last year show Truist has 29.4% of the Cary market, Wells Fargo 20.4%, Bank of America 17.1%, and First Citizens 6.3%. PNC follows at 5.2%, Town Bank at 4.6%, and J.P. Morgan Chase at 4.5%. Jim Rose, president of United Community Bank's North Carolina operations, said the firm's new Cary branch is a little bit ahead of schedule. United Community sought an early edge by beginning outreach in the market years before the branch opened as development of the site progressed. Reed, whose bank also operates a branch in downtown Cary, said personal service and strong relationships will be central to growing Town Bank's expanded presence. "In today's world where fraud is rampant, just off the charts, there is no better time to have a personal banking relationship so you can make sure you're protecting yourself," Reed said. J.P. Morgan Chase is also expanding in Cary with a new, soon-to-open branch. Cary holds more than $6.2 billion in deposits overall. And in more banking news, Wells Fargo is to close a Wake County branch. One of the biggest banks in the country is cutting its footprint in Garner, as Wells Fargo is closing its branch at 1301 Fifth Avenue. A bank spokesperson said branches continue to play an important role and that Wells Fargo will continue to invest in its footprint despite the closure. "We are actively investing in our branch network by opening new locations and refurbishing our entire network," the spokesperson said in an email. The bank still has one remaining branch in Garner, according to its website. That location is at 1225 U.S. Highway 70, about a mile from the shuttering location. Federal Deposit Insurance Corp. data from June shows Wells Fargo's 33 branch count as being behind only Truist's 34 in the Raleigh Metro. In Chatham County, road upgrades could snag next big manufacturer. Chatham County hopes to leverage highway improvements into economic wins. The North Carolina Department of Transportation's recent approval of $8 million worth of milling and resurfacing work is critical for keeping the region in the economic development conversation and supporting the companies already here. The work, expected to start this summer, includes more than a dozen secondary roads and two major highways. NC 902 from NC 42/22 to US 421, totaling 11.5 miles. In Pittsburgh, U.S. 64 Business from the U.S. 64 bypass to U.S. 15501, totaling 2.8 miles. Michael Smith, president of the Chatham County Economic Development Corp., said transportation infrastructure is a hot topic in recruiting. His conversations with executives and site selection consultants frequently involve questions about interstate proximity. He has to sell Highway 1, reminding them it's pretty much an interstate. Bill would ease burden on community banks. For First Carolina Bank, the standard 12-month exam cycle has begun to feel less like a periodic checkup and more like a continuous audit cycle. Ron Day, CEO of the $3.5 billion bank headquartered in Rocky Mount, said the pressure comes from both the heavy preparation involved and the reality that exams can stretch on for 6 months or longer. His team is also responsible for managing its own internal audits, creating a year-round time crunch that's expensive and growing. Relief may be coming. A bipartisan group of lawmakers in Washington is pushing to loosen longstanding regulatory thresholds for banks of this size. The latest effort is the Tailored Regulatory Updates for Supervisory Testing, or TRUST Act. Presently, banks with more than $3 billion in assets are subject to on-site examinations every 12 months. The bill would raise that threshold to $6 billion, meaning more community banks would be examined every 18 months instead. In a statement, NC Senator Ted Budd, a sponsor of the bill, said the current threshold has failed to keep up with inflation, industry consolidation, and modern risk management practices. Peter Gwaltney, CEO of the North Carolina Bankers Association, said the bill will allow regulators to concentrate on banks that may need more attention. News of the happenings in the Greater Triangle is brought to us by Ben Tobin. Harnett County expands airport. A fast-growing Triangle County has spent millions on land as part of its airport expansion. Harnett County government purchased roughly 80 acres off Airport Road near the Harnett Regional Jetport for $3 million last month, according to deed records. The land has an Irwin address and is zoned for industrial use. Harnett County Manager Brent Trout said the land is for a project to extend the airport's 5,000-foot runway by 500 feet. The airport received a $15.6 million earmark for infrastructure upgrades in the 2023 state budget. The runway extension will allow larger jet airplanes to land and take off from Harnett Regional Jetport, Trout said. In addition to the land needed for the runway extension, the land purchased also allows us to have ownership of the runway protection zone from the end of the runway extension to the Cape Fear River. 2 years ago, the county completed the construction of a 7,000-square-foot terminal building at the Jetport, which houses the county's Economic Development Department. Future projects for the Harnett Regional Jetport include building a larger fuel farm as well as a new corporate hangar area, the latter of which is expected to start construction this year. The Harnett County Board of Commissioners has made a strong push to develop the Jetport as a driver to future economic development in Harnett County, Trout said. According to the biennial North Carolina State of Aviation report released in January 2025, the Harnett Regional Jetport had over $203 million in economic output, the ninth largest economic output of 64 general aviation airports throughout North Carolina. Harnett County has a little over 146,000 residents, marking a major increase from a population of under 115,000 in 2010, according to the most recent estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau. In Johnston County, retirement community moves forward. Plans for a senior living complex in Johnston County are moving forward after the developer acquired land for the project. Dominium, a Dallas owner and manager of affordable housing communities, said recently it bought 8.3 acres off Pritchard Road in East Clayton. The sellers are a couple of LLCs that share an address with Raleigh Real Estate Group APG Companies, led by Jim Anthony. Dominium said the complex will be called Pritchard Woods, and the complex marks the company's first new construction development in the Raleigh area. It recently acquired a pair of apartment communities in Durham. The Clayton community will feature 167 one- and two-bedroom apartment homes, as well as a fitness center, library, computer center, and theater room. Rezoning for the project was approved in September in a 4-1 vote by the Clayton Town Council after a tense public hearing that lasted more than 2 hours. In Granville County, an industrial park in a small town north of Durham sells. An industrial park in Butner has sold for a big price. Ekus Capital Partners of Pennsylvania purchased the Falls Lake Commerce Center off Interstate 85 for just shy of $47 million, according to Granville County deed records. Ekus said the acquisition was completed on behalf of Sweetgrass 2, a programmatic joint venture between an affiliate of Ekus and a U.S.-based public pension plan. The center at 200 Business Park consists of three Class A buildings totaling approximately 342,000 square feet. The buildings are 100% leased. ECA said it is looking to acquire institutional quality industrial assets in established high growth markets with efficient access to transportation infrastructure. And finally, in the Greater Triangle, Franklin County, Baltimore firm plans industrial park. Out-of-state developers like what they see in Franklin County, north of Raleigh, and they're acting on it. In the most recent investment pouring into Franklin County, the fastest-growing county in the Triangle region and second fastest in North Carolina, Baltimore-St. John Properties is planning an industrial park in Youngsville with approximately 120,000 square feet spread across three buildings. Through LLC Youngsville Park Avenue, St. John Properties in November purchased 25 acres off Park Avenue, which is US 1 alternate, for $1.2 million for the Youngsville Business Park, according to Franklin County deed records. St. John Properties Raleigh area regional partner Dustin Atkilski said, "We obviously have a lot of belief in the US 1 corridor, and we obviously like the numbers we're seeing come out of Franklin County." He added, "We really just like the community. We're excited to start offering some quality commercial space, which we feel that market is in desperate need of." The buildings will be Class A flex space, Atkilski said. "We're kind of going after a little bit of everything up there as far as potential tenants, ranging across a variety of sectors," he said. St. John Properties is looking to go vertical in April on the first two buildings, with delivery in early 2027. Reporter Zach Ezone writes about the healthcare and life sciences world. Raleigh Hospital expansions top $500 million. The Triangle's largest health systems have received approval to expand their hospitals in Wake County. In the largest project, Wake Med Health and Hospital secured approval to add 164 acute care beds to its main campus in Raleigh. The project, expected to cost about $430 million, would involve the construction of a vertical and horizontal expansion to one of the main hospital's existing wings, according to an application WakeMed filed last year. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services approved proposals from Duke Health, UNC Health, and WakeMed, while also denying other proposals. For the second straight year, the regulator denied a proposal from Novant Health to grab a stronger foothold in the Triangle with a new hospital. The 2025 State Medical Facilities Plan identified a need for 267 more hospital beds in Wake County. The large allocation of beds drew proposals from many of the state's largest healthcare providers. The state denied proposals from Wake Med to add more beds at Wake Med North Hospital and a new hospital being built in Garner. Duke and UNC split the remaining beds, with DHHS approving scaled-back proposals from both health systems. Duke was approved to develop 52 additional beds at its Duke Raleigh Hospital at an approved capital expenditure of $29 million. This is about half the number of beds Duke was seeking. DHHS also denied Duke's proposal to add more beds to a future hospital in West Cary. UNC secured approval to develop 51 additional beds at UNC Health Rex in Raleigh at an approved capital expenditure of $98 million. As with Duke, this approval fell short of the 106 beds that UNC sought. The state regulator also denied UNC's application for a new 50-bed acute care hospital in Wake Forest. Novant Health also failed to secure approval to build a new hospital in Wake County for the second consecutive application cycle. The health system based in Winston-Salem has major operations across North Carolina, except for the Triangle, aside from a few physicians' offices. In reproductive care, UNC Fertility adds partner as it looks to broaden mission. UNC Health's fertility practice is partnering with a global company as it looks to expand across North Carolina. UNC Fertility has joined with IVIRMA North America as it works to meet surging demand for reproductive care and infertility services throughout the state. UNC Fertility operates a center on ACC Boulevard in the Briar Creek area. After some changes to the fertility field following the pandemic, the clinic has spent the past two-plus years recruiting physicians and redesigning operations, said Dr. Colleen Milroy, medical director at UNC Fertility and UNC's Health Division Chief of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility. The clinic has grown to five physicians, three advanced practice providers, three fellows, and other healthcare providers. Last year, the practice saw about 1,400 new patients and more than 4,000 patients overall. We're completely rebuilt, functioning on all cylinders, Milroy said. We just saw our best year ever. UNC Fertility is partnering with IVIRMA North America as it explores expansion possibilities. These expansion plans are in the early stages as the collaboration is new, Milroy said. And in the battle against cancer, proton therapy centers to rise in area. UNC Health is advancing plans for a nearly $40 million project that would bring an emerging form of cancer treatment to the Triangle. The health system is adding a proton beam therapy system to its medical campus in Chapel Hill. Meanwhile, Duke Health is advancing plans to develop a similar but much more expansive project in Durham. Proton therapy is a highly specialized form of radiation treatment that uses a beam of protons to precisely target cancer cells. Proton therapy is often used in treating sensitive areas. UNC's efforts to bring proton therapy to Chapel Hill began in 2018 when it secured a certificate of need from the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services to acquire proton therapy equipment. My understanding has been that in 2018 they were about to be able to start the process, and then the pandemic occurred and priorities shifted, said Dr. Gene Wright, chair of the Department of Radiation Oncology at UNC. Atrium Health at Charlotte operates the only proton therapy equipment in North Carolina, which it brought online in 2024. Duke Health wants to build a proton therapy center at its Durham campus with the goal of having service online in 2029. UNC plans to begin treating patients with proton therapy by early 2028. The latest news in real estate and development is brought to us by Kaylee Thompson. Penthouses bring high rent prices. Downtown Raleigh is getting more upscale apartments, but living high above the city will cost a pretty penny. Over the past year, a handful of high-end apartment buildings have opened downtown, and their rental rates are staggering for the mid-sized city that only had three high-rises 30 years ago, none of which were residential. The most recently opened 20-story residential towers are the Holston and the Ray, the twin residential buildings that make up the Weld adjacent to Dix Park. Both have penthouses that boast skyline views in addition to regular apartments. Penthouses at the Holston start at $28.95 per month for a studio and reach up to $84.60 a month for a three-bedroom. Premium residences at the Ray include penthouses and townhomes ranging from $2,068 for a studio to $6,255 for a two-bedroom. Across South Saunders Street from the Weld is the Row at Rockaway Raleigh. Despite only rising seven stories, prices can get pretty high at the Row. Its most expensive unit is a three-bedroom corner apartment that starts at $4,020 per month. A two-bedroom townhome unit is $3,199, while a two-bedroom apartment can be up to $3,220. Both the Weld and the Row have views of Dix Park and downtown Raleigh, along with easy access to Dix Park. Moving further south into downtown Raleigh is the Mave, a 20-story mixed-use building with an eighth-floor outdoor amenity terrace. In April, it will have been open for a year. It has one, two, and three-bedroom penthouses where monthly rates run from $1,867 to $7,673. More residential towers are on their way, like Highline Glenwood in Glenwood South, which is set to be the tallest residential tower in Raleigh at 37 stories. Highline Glenwood will have 306 luxury units, where 16 will be penthouse units. In Northeast Raleigh, apartments sold for a whopping $106 million. A large apartment complex in Northeast Raleigh has sold for more than $100 million, adding to a string of high-dollar multifamily sales in the past year. Landmark Companies of New Jersey acquired the Hudson 5401 apartments for $106 million per Wake County deed records. Hudson 5401 is just outside Interstate 540, near the Wake Technical Community College North Campus. Hudson 5401 has 454 units across 15 three-story buildings. The apartments are 93% leased, according to the apartment's website. Two other Triangle apartment complexes have sold for more than $100 million in the past year. Park Central in North Hills sold for $132.5 million in October, while Peace Rally in Smoky Hollow sold in March for $152 million. Eric Harvitt, principal at Landmark, said the company sold a 10-property portfolio for $90 million in New Jersey so it could diversify geographically. 20 million land sale propels mega project in Durham. A huge mixed-use development in southeast Durham is moving forward after a $20 million land sale. Charlotte-based Beacon Partners has closed on 119 acres along Highway 70 and Leesville Road on the edge of Briar Creek, per Durham County deed records. The land is for industrial buildings that will be part of Durham Gateway, a 300-acre development that also calls for up to 1,750 residential units, plus office and retail space. The $20.4 million land acquisition comes 5 months after Beacon received rezoning approval for the development from Durham City Council. Josh McArdle, director at Beacon, said the 119 acres will hold 1.28 million square feet of industrial space built out in two phases. The first phase will have two to three buildings. Phase one construction will start by the beginning of the fourth quarter, with delivery anticipated at the end of 2027. McArdle said that phase two's timeline will be dependent on tenant demand. Phase two will have two to four buildings. The industrial piece will be on the western and southern portions of the development site, which sits along the north side of Highway 70. The space will be built for distribution, manufacturing, and life sciences tenants. The land for the development is owned by Stevens Enterprises. Kate Tracy is the reporter on the Retail and Restaurants beat. Her top story this week, Figalina surges after beard nod. Perhaps no one knows the highs and lows of being a new restaurant owner better than David Ellis. In the chef's first 2 years at the helm of Figalina Pasta and Provisions in Raleigh's Warehouse District, Ellis landed a James Beard Foundation nomination for Best New Restaurant, a nationwide honor. But he also struggled to make it through his first summer slump and spent thousands on unexpected equipment repairs. Figalina opened in February 2024 at 317 South Harrington Street, the former home of Humble Pie, serving handmade pasta and dishes with Southern and British influences. The opening buzz lasted for months, but eventually died down once summer hit. A summer slowdown is typical for local restaurants when locals skip town in favor of the beach or mountains, but that doesn't make managing restaurants any easier. Ellis remembers frequently calling servers to tell them not to come to work because of the lack of reservations. It's not seasonal like a place at the beach is seasonal, but you do have those couple of months where it just drops off, he said. Figalina's total revenue increased from $1.9 million in 2024 to $2.5 million last year. The restaurant's lowest revenue month was August 2024, while its highest was October 2025. The restaurant has been profitable since early 2025, Ellis said. He expects an even better 2026. The restaurant recently spent $20,000 on kitchen renovations, adding a grill and fryer. A year ago, after Figalina landed a James Beard nomination for Best New Restaurant, a few chefs in town texted Ellis to prepare for the subsequent rush. It was a couple of months of just nonstop crazy, Ellis recalled. Figalina's revenue increased 26% from June 2024 to June 2025, while July revenue increased 42%, which is kind of insane, Ellis said. Atlanta firm buys Raleigh Marketing Company. A marketing company based in Atlanta is establishing itself in Raleigh with the acquisition of a six-year-old firm. Infinity Communications has acquired Blueprint Business Communications with offices at 709 West Johnston Street downtown. Infinity has offices in Georgia, Alabama, and North Carolina with clients in the state that include Tanger and Grubb Properties. Blueprint founder Bryce Connor said the timing was right. With some of the shifts in the landscape, we thought now was the time to be able to have some more of those resources from a firm a little bigger than us that has 30-plus years relationships with big North Carolina brands, and that culturally with our blue values that it was a good fit, he said. Connors was also attracted to Infinity for its enhanced technology. It's no secret, especially in the marketing world right now, there's a lot of talk about AI, and Infinity will enable us to have access to some of those solutions that we didn't necessarily have access to beforehand, he said. Blueprint's 2025 revenue was $1.2 million. The firm has four staff members and four contract employees, while Infinity has 10 full-time employees. Blueprint will retain its branding and office space in Glenwood South. Restaurateur temporarily closes market. After opening in September 2024, a food and beverage market from restaurateur Giorgio's Picacius is temporarily closing in Raleigh. Giorgio's Epicurean Market, GEM, which features a butcher, bakery, coffee bar, and retail items, as well as an expansive outdoor seating area, served its last customers February 11th, the restaurant announced on social media. The closure is for an undisclosed period of time. A transformation is coming to Jim, and it's something we've been dreaming up behind the scenes for a while, the Instagram post read. We can't wait to share our visions of a refreshed hospitality experience. While we pause service, we apologize for the temporary inconvenience and look forward to welcoming you back soon. Jim is sandwiched between two other restaurants from Bacacius Giorgio's Hospitality Group. Tomi Sushi opened in the fall, while East End Bistro is on the opposite side. Bacacius has other irons in the fire. He's opening Gio's Tavern and Oyster Bar this spring in Chapel Hill. His Durham restaurant, Nikos, also earned a nod on the Michelin Guide's inaugural American South Guide as a recommended restaurant. Meanwhile, Kipos Greek Taverna in Chapel Hill is scheduled to reopen after severe flooding from Tropical Depression Chantal. East End is located off East Whittaker Mill Road between Wake Forest Road and Atlantic Avenue. The last of the reporter pages is On the Coast, written by Dane Huffman. In Wilmington, Novant has expansion plans. Novant Health may have been snubbed in the Triangle, but the Winston-Salem Healthcare Group has big plans for Wilmington. The company announced February 12th that its Board of Trustees has approved major construction plans in the booming region. The announcement came after, for the second year in a row, state regulators denied a proposal from Novant Health to grab a stronger foothold in the Triangle with a new hospital. But Novant's plans in fast-growing Wilmington are extensive. The plan includes a new heart and vascular patient tower at the South 17th Street campus, a major outpatient services expansion for heart and vascular care, a new physical rehabilitation hospital that will nearly double capacity, and improvements to two floors of New Hanover Regional Medical Center. This investment will fuel generational change to healthcare in this community, said Ernie Bovio, president of the Novant Health Coastal Region. Novant said the cost will exceed $1 billion over a period running from 5 to 7 years. Novant entered the Wilmington market in February 2021 with the acquisition of New Hanover Regional Medical Center and has continued to look to grow in the expanding city. The organization said that Novant Health Heart and Vascular Institute is seeing 18,000 new patients this year in the coastal region. Collectively, the HVI team completes more than 120,000 outpatient clinic visits each year, along with more than 12,500 surgeries and procedures. Those numbers are expected to grow as the population ages. Additionally, Novant Health will add a second 80,000-square-foot heart and vascular medical office building in Wilmington. That original facility is at full capacity, the system said. The new patient tower would be built in place of the Novant Health New Hanover Rehabilitation Hospital on the South 17th Street campus. Also in Wilmington, a Wilmington manufacturer to expand. Wilmington Machinery, a company that manufactures equipment for plastics processing, is expanding its operations in the coastal city. The company plans to add more than 33,000 square feet to its existing 56,700 square foot building in the port city, reports the Wilmington Business Journal. Plans for the expansion are scheduled to go before New Hanover County's Technical Review Committee on February 18th, or did go forward on February 18th, the newspaper reported. Founded in 1972, Wilmington Machinery makes its business in injection molding and rotary blow molding machinery and systems. It was acquired by a local private investor in 2025, according to a release. Bank of America shifts a branch in Brunswick County. Bank of America is shifting a branch along the coast in a market that is getting rising attention from the banks. The Charlotte banking giant is moving a branch from 7455 High Market Street in Sunset Beach to another location in Brunswick County. Bank of America plans to open at 109 Smith Avenue in Shallotte. Shallotte, just off of Highway 17, is a small but growing town that includes the River's Edge Golf Course. Shallotte is growing rapidly. It had 4,185 people in 2020, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, but now has roughly 5,000. Bank of America also has a branch in Southport at 5070 Southport Supply Road Southeast. The next closest Bank of America branch is in Carolina Beach. Other banks have a physical presence in Brunswick County. For example, First Citizens has branches in Southport and Oak Island, and Truist Bank has a physical branch in Leland and Southport. In Nag's Head, historic Outer Banks motel scooped up. A historic motel in the Outer Banks is sold to an out-of-state investor for millions of dollars. Bethesda, Maryland-based CRDR Seafoam LLC purchased the Seafoam Motel at 7111 South Virginia Dare Trail in Nag's Head last month for a little more than $5.6 million, according to Dare County deed records. The seller of the 69,000-square-foot motel is Richmond, Virginia-based LLC Seafoam Properties. Jeff Fabricant, who is listed as the organizer of CRDR Seafoam LLC, told Triangle Business Journal that his group identified a unique opportunity to acquire and thoughtfully reinvest in an iconic Outer Banks property. He added, "Our intention is to preserve the character and charm that have made it a longstanding favorite among vacationers while implementing measured upgrades over time to enhance the overall guest experience." Fabricant said his group plans to invest $2 million on capital improvements for the past couple of years. "We are honored to build upon the legacy of prior ownership, who operated the property for more than four decades," Fabricant said. The Seafoam Motel was built in 1948, offering 50 rooms for guests. In 2004, it was added to the National Register of Historic Places. Our cover story this week is a special report, The Idea Exchange. The Triangle is fortunate to have so many women in leadership roles who are making a difference in our community and are willing to prepare the next generation of leaders. Triangle mentors weigh in with their best advice for mentees. The TBJ asked, "What was an obstacle you faced early in your career and how did you respond?" And I'll read the responses from various mentors. The first one is Lisa Weidel, CEO of FRS Communications. She said, "The communication and marketing industry is ever-evolving with new technology and platforms. When I had gone as far as I could with one company, I took on a job that meant learning new tools and platforms quickly." And I forgot to read the question. The question was, "What was an obstacle you faced early in your career, and how did you respond?" Stacy Penn, founder and CEO of Say Group, said, "Early in my career, I underpriced my services, which unintentionally communicated less value. A peer advisory group challenged me to reassess my pricing and address imposter syndrome. When I raised my rates, there was no client pushback. The resulting revenue growth validated both the quality of my work and the importance of pricing with confidence." Greta Nance, director of social and brand strategy at Amelia Aesthetics HQ, answered, "Believing that I could be one person at work and another in my personal life, it's so much more powerful and peaceful to align your personal beliefs and the core values regardless of the role you're playing." Marlene Spritzer, vice president and partner at Lee & Associates, replied, "Not realizing how much leverage I actually had to accomplish a goal." And Leslie Walden, vice president public affairs at Fidelity Investments, answered, "When the stakes are highest, listen more closely and to more stakeholders. Make it clear that you need their help seeing the issue from all sides and that it's safe to give you a candid decision. You may decide to go another way, but they will appreciate being given the opportunity to weigh in and may even buy in." The next question from the TBJ, "What skills or mindsets will be most valuable in the next 5 years?" Stacy Penn said, "People-centered leadership and strong communication will be essential. As remote and hybrid work continue, the ability to build trust, adapt quickly, and lead with empathy while leveraging technology will separate effective leaders from the rest." Lisa M.K. Jones, the CEO of Girl Scouts NC and Coastal Pines, replied, "Adaptability, emotional intelligence, and the ability to lead through complexity. Leaders will need to listen deeply, build trust across differences, and make thoughtful decisions while navigating constant change." Lisa Weidel, CEO of FRS Communications, answered, "Flexibility is critical. Our world is changing at a fast pace, and the ability to shift quickly will keep you on a path to success." Marlene Spritzer, the vice president and partner at Lee & Associates, answered, "Being able to prioritize and to continue to learn and update skills." And just a refresher, the question was, what skills or mindsets will be most valuable in the next 5 years? Stacy Penn answered, "One of my mentors noticed a sign I kept on my desk that read, 'I can't even.' She replaced the sign with a new one that said, 'What would you attempt if you knew you could not fail?' That simple change reinforced how a mindset shift can have a huge influence on how you approach a challenge." The next question from the TBJ, "What can a mentee do to make the most of a relationship with a mentor?" Jane Doggett, Raleigh market lead and partner of Foundry Commercial, replied, "Be intentional with the time and with what you are hopeful to gain out of the mentorship, but also think, what can you do? Reverse mentoring is real." Greta Nance, the director of social and brand strategy at Amelia Aesthetics HQ, replied, "Bring something to the table. Your mentor can help only if you are bringing clear issues and ideas to the conversation." Leslie Walden, the vice president of public affairs at Fidelity Investments, replied, "Most importantly, study what it takes to be a good mentor. Drive the process. Take charge of the relationship. Express gratitude by being successful." And Lisa M.K. Jones, who again is the CEO of Girl Scouts NC, Coastal, and Pines, "A mentee can make the most of a mentoring relationship by being intentional and prepared. That means arriving with clear questions, staying curious, and being genuinely open to feedback." TBJ asks, "Which habit or routine has been most critical to your success?" Leslie Walden replied, "Every decision I make has to be one that allows me to sleep well that night." Lisa Weidel said, "Instead of multitasking, just doing the next right thing." Jane Doggett replied, "Exercise in the morning is a routine that, when I stick to it, has the biggest mental rewards and meaningful time spent with my exercise friends." And Marlene Spritzer, vice president and partner at Lee & Associates, said, "Being as prepared as possible and making sure I proof my data and responses before responding." TBJ asks, "What's a lesson you learned from a mentor that has positively shaped your career?" Leslie Walden replied, "I was invited to a C-suite table early in my career and brought a moment of imposter syndrome to a leader I admired and trusted. I told her that I didn't feel qualified or know what I was expected to contribute and wondered why me. She gave me what felt like a verbal slap in the face, saying something like, 'Get over yourself. What makes you think that you know more than they do about who they want at the table? You've been invited. That's all you need to know. Show up, listen closely, ask questions, and figure out how you can add value. Anytime I'm asked to stretch," I remember her words. Marlene Spritzer replied, "To be as prepared as possible and to be as objective as possible and to be consistent." And just a reminder, the question was, "What's a lesson you learned from a mentor that has positively shaped your career?" Lisa M.K. Jones said, "A mentor earlier in my career taught me that leadership is not just about fixing problems, but about leaving organizations stronger than you found them. That lesson has shaped how I approach challenges by focusing on culture and capacity building, ensuring progress continues well beyond the immediate issue." And Lisa Weidel replied, "When exploring options to launch a business, I met Elaine Marshall, NC Secretary of State, at a TBJ Mentoring Monday. Elaine helped guide me in a business plan that made it possible for me to establish a business that can last beyond my lifetime." Jane Doggett replied, "My father always told me to surround yourself with people who are smarter than you, and that to one whom much is given, much is expected. Two principles I live by as a servant leader: being curious and knowing collaboration leads to the best outcomes." Greta Nance, the director of social and brand strategy at Amelia Aesthetics HQ, replied, Once I've voiced my opinion on something and been heard, regardless of the outcome, I need to fully commit to that decision for the good of the team and our business, not stand in the way of it just because I don't agree. That was a hard but powerful lesson to learn. Mentoring Monday is due to take place on February 23rd. It will be at the Embassy Suites by Hilton, Raleigh-Durham Research Triangle at 201 Harrison Oaks Boulevard in Cary. If you'd like to register to attend, it's bizjournals.com/triangle/event. I'll read it again, bizjournals.com/triangle/event. And I'll read the list of all the mentors that will be there. The keynote speaker is Claire Coffey. She's the CEO and founder of Intrepid Build. Also, there will be Sarah Beckloff, the CEO of Omics Lab Solutions, Rachel Boone, the founder of Be Evolved HR, Angela Brady, the senior VP and global head project leadership and client relations at Allucent, Linda Broderick, the senior VP head of global procurement and vendor management at MetLife, Nimashina Burns, the president and CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Durham, Angela Connor, Chief of Staff Community Marketing and CSR of Blue Cross North Carolina, Krista Covey, CEO and founder of First Flight Venture Center, Wendy Coulter, CEO and founder of Hummingbird Creative Group, Kelly Crosby, the Director of Division of Mental Health and Development Disabilities and Substance Abuse Services at the NCDHHS, Corey Dahl, Senior VP, Director of Marketing and Analytics at First Bank, Jane Doggett, who we heard from in the previous article, Raleigh Market Lead and Partner of Foundry Commercial, Sarah Glover, Entrepreneur at TEDx, Speaker and University Instructor, Reify Media, Jeronica Goodwin, Senior VP of Human Resources and Chief People Officer at Wake Med Health and Hospitals, Aaron Grins, Chief Development Officer of Aqualis, Sherry Haggerty, President and Owner, Sherry Haggerty Group and Hodge and Kittrell's Sotheby's International Realty, Lisa Jones, the CEO of Girl Scouts North Carolina Coastal Pines, Claudette LeBlanc, Chief Operations Officer of Rapid Scale, a Cox Business Company, Amy Maylou, Director of Treasury Management Sales at First Horizon Bank, Morgan Mansa, Director of Housing at Wake County Government, Jennifer Martin, Executive Director of Shop Local Raleigh, Teresa Merck, former Managing Director and Licensed Architect, Interior Architects, Merrill Murtaugh, Attorney at Wyrick Robbins, Olivia Nadesan, Head of Pricing and Deal Solutions at Nutanix, Greta Nance, Director of Social and Brand Strategies at Amelia Aesthetics HQ, we heard from her before, Margaret Palango, CEO of Auto Shop Solutions, Stacy Penn, Founder and CEO of Say, S-A-Y Group, Kelly Rowell, or Rowell, Fractional Operating Leader, Michelle Shelton, COO of Coastal Credit Union, Marlene Spritzer, VP and Principal Lee & Associates, Carolyn Taylor, Senior VP and Chief Lending Officer, M&F Bank, Demetra Thornton, Principal Managing Director at Gensler, Leslie Walden, Vice President Public Affairs and Fidelity Investments, Stella Walton, CEO and Owner Sterling Pillar, Lisa Weidel, Chief Encouragement Officer, FRS Communications, Chelsea Williams, Founder and CEO of Reimagine Talent, and finally, Kimberly Williams, Owner and CEO of Right Time Realty. We have an article from TBJ's Editor-in-Chief, Rebecca Troyer, Why We're Continuing Our Project Life Series. This week, Triangle Business Journal launches the fourth year of our Project Life series focused on executive and worker wellness. When we started this project, we had no idea how long it would last, but we knew one thing for certain. The negative impacts that adverse health conditions have on employees and employers in the Triangle wouldn't be reversed quickly. What we found and continue to find are endless stories of providers, companies, and individuals who are deploying solutions and strategies geared toward improving the physical and mental well-being of Triangle workers and business owners. Our coverage, with reporting by Connie Gentry and photographs by Mehmet Demirci, doesn't merely shine a light on the problems and symptoms. We tap into the innovative and often expansive efforts that Triangle companies and providers are undertaking to promote wellness in the workplace. Over the past year, we've reported on the ways Triangle providers are doubling down on mental health treatment options, innovative cancer treatments like those featured in this week's story, and improved patient access to IVF options. We followed new approaches to occupational therapy, workplace ergonomics, and opportunities for disabled veterans. We've highlighted programs to address eating disorders, teen suicide, and chronic pain. Our stories also include valuable data to give readers additional context, such as the impact of various health conditions on the workplace or statistics on the impact of wellness strategies. While many of our stories feature companies and providers at the front and center of our coverage are the people who are leading the charge to improve the health of Triangle workers and executives. Their personal stories reveal the passion behind so many of these endeavors. I've noticed at almost every one of our editorial panel events, no matter whether the topic is the economy, real estate, or AI, the one thing that consistently resonates with panelists about the Triangle is the quality of life here. The climate and geography are ideal. The business climate is vibrant, and the economic development pipeline is robust. Our educational institutions are world-class. And perhaps most importantly, the availability of healthcare options in the Triangle, from primary care to niche specialties, is outstanding. Coupled with the innovative mindset that our life sciences and biotech sector bring to the mix, it only makes sense that having a healthier workforce should be a high priority for those of us living here. If you have a story to tell about efforts to improve workplace wellness, drop me a line. That's rtroyer, T-R-O-Y-E-R, at bizjournals, bizjournals.com. Or reach out to our Project Life Manager Associate Editor, Cameron Snipes. That's csnipes at bizjournals.com. Let TBJ's Project Life coverage be part of your executive and worker support network. So let's go into it. This week's Project Life, written by Connie Gentry. A bold new weapon to fight cancer. A Duke clinical trial is testing a powerful new immunotherapy that unleashes the body's own defenses to fight advanced colorectal cancer. Like many, Greg Friedman never saw his cancer diagnosis coming. At 47, when his family doctor recommended a colonoscopy because the age for routine screening had dropped to 45, Friedman agreed, even though there were no symptoms and no immediate family history of colon cancer. It was just a prudent box to check. I went in not expecting anything and came out with a diagnosis of colon cancer in January of 2023. Without a definitive cure, the name of the game with cancer is buy time, said Friedman, now in year four of his battle with cancer. A clinical trial conducted at Duke University that combines two immunotherapy treatments is having groundbreaking effects in the fight against colorectal cancer and buying that time back. Having lost both his mother and his first wife to breast cancer, Friedman began with self-advocacy, interviewing providers, looking beyond standard approaches, and asking questions to identify treatment options. The interview process was important. One provider offered the basic standard of care and didn't have much guidance when I asked what else I could do. But Duke had a lot of opportunities for me to explore, said Friedman, who was familiar with clinical studies from his career in the life sciences industry. A lot of patients expect the doctor to tell them what to do, and that's troublesome because if you just sit back and ride, you may not get the best treatment, and you may not get the opportunity that exists with clinical studies, he said. It's important from a patient perspective to ask potent questions that allow you to participate in your treatment plan and investigate options. Friedman initially participated in a Duke study for ctDNA blood testing that indicated if he should start chemotherapy. For a few months, he did not need it. Then my ctDNA flipped from negative to positive, so I started chemo, he said. After a few months of chemotherapy, his blood work was again negative, and his oncologist stopped the treatments and periodically monitored his stats. After 6 to 8 months, it turned positive again, always the bad news, so I asked about other options, Friedman said. That's when he learned about Duke's clinical trial that was tackling colorectal cancer with immunotherapy treatments using a combination of botensilimab and balstilimab from biotech innovator Agenus. It's specifically to activate the immune system and address microsatellite stable metastatic colorectal cancer. Physician scientist Dr. Nicholas DeVito, the primary investigator on the immunotherapy clinical trial and assistant professor of medical oncology at Duke, said the emphasis was to give immunotherapy as the first line of treatment to not beat up patients' immune systems with chemotherapy. We give a potentially durable, effective immunotherapy early in a patient's care, both botensilimab and balstilimab, together first with chemotherapy as a backup plan. We are anatomically selecting patients with stage 4, so classically incurable, microsatellite stable metastatic colorectal cancer, and each of the trial patients had metastasis to the inside of their abdomen, lung, or lymph node, or to all three. Freeman entered the trial and began immunotherapy treatments in January 2025. I chose the clinical trial rather than going straight back into chemotherapy because from what I've seen through my personal history, chemotherapy poisons the whole body because in the process of targeting the cancer, it also kills healthy cells. An opportunity for something that's intended to improve my own immune system is a radically better approach, Friedman said. After starting the immunotherapy trial, his cancer initially slowed. It actually removed some of the nodes that were visible in my CT scans, and it got me to a semi-stable state, Friedman said. But as his treatments progressed, additional growth was detected, so Friedman opted to add chemotherapy with the immunotherapy. Another patient in the trial, a 30-year-old with lung metastasis, now has no evidence of disease. This is an absolute first. Chemotherapy has never touched his veins, and all his lung lesions are gone, DeVito said. Before, he would have been treated with chemotherapies and blood vessel-blocking drugs that have a stroke risk. Instead, he has tolerated his procedure well, and he could be potentially cured of metastatic colon cancer. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. We hope you've enjoyed listening. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.